This call is being recorded.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the second installment of the Small Cap Discoveries Management Webinar Series. My name is Brandon Mackey, and I am the co-writer of the Small Cap Discoveries newsletter, along with Paul Andriola. Small Cap Discoveries is a newsletter dedicated to uncovering Canada's premier emerging growth stocks. I'm joined today with Philippe Beringer, founder and writer of the Espace Microcap blog. Philippe is a full-time investor and was recently recognized in MoneySense for growing his tax-free savings account to over $100,000, exclusively through small cap trading. We've known Philippe for a long time and are pleased to be collaborating with him on the series.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Today, we are talking about the software as a service, or SaaS, industry. The SaaS model is a method of selling centrally hosted software on a subscription basis. It has been called on-demand software and allows clients to access the software via a web browser. The SaaS model is disrupting traditional software deployment and has been serving up big profits to investors riding this wave. The SaaS model offers exactly what the market craves: high margins and recurring revenues. And companies showing high growth have been awarded massive multiples in the market. In the U.S., for example, you have Workday and FireEye, both trading at almost 18 times revenues. We've also seen some big winners come out of the small cap arena. We watched Solium Capital, ticker SUM on the venture, go from under $2 in 2012 to almost $8 today. So investors who know what to look for can make huge profits in the SaaS space. It's one of our favorite places to go hunting for new ideas. But the challenge with the SaaS model is it almost guarantees a company will have negative cash flows for a while, often 4 to 5 years. And funding this cash flow gap can be especially hard for small caps. So we are here today to talk one small cap company in particular that is becoming a rising star in the space. We're talking Acru. Acru trades on the TSX Venture under the symbol AKR. Acru offers a SaaS model that delivers clients gift card and loyalty solutions designed to increase customer retention. So full disclosure before we begin, Paul and myself have no position in the stock, and Philippe has long shares of Acru. So now we are pleased to welcome Steve Lovely, CEO of Acru. Steve has over 15 years of sales and marketing experience and was promoted from Executive Vice President of Sales to CEO of Acru in May 2014. Acru is having a strong year under Steve's leadership. Shares are up almost 200% year to date. Steve, welcome to our webinar.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay. So can you talk to us high level for a moment and describe what solutions Acru offers and how they use the SaaS model to deliver them?
Happy to. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, the SaaS model has become a popular driver for pretty much our whole industry. And if I look at any of our direct competitors, everyone's moved to that strong, recurring, predictable revenue model that allows you to kind of grow your business. So for us, all of our solutions, whether they're our gift card, our loyalty, or even our promotional currency solutions, they all bleed back to that subscription kind of model, where every time there's a customer that's swiping a transaction into a point-of-sale terminal, we either put people into flat monthly plans or they'll actually pay us per transaction. So for every transaction that actually happens in the marketplace, we put all of our customers into that flat rate, predictable monthly fee that allows us to kind of build and scale out our business. Like you mentioned, it's more of a pay-later model, but what it does for your business, it gives you that predictability from a cost standpoint to scale in over time. So all of our solutions relate back to the SaaS model, even right down to some of our peripheral things that we're doing now from a licensing perspective.
Okay, great. Now take us back for a second. When you came on as CEO, the company had just lost $3.9 million in 2013 and had just $250,000 in the bank. What were the challenges you faced coming on, and how did you get the company back on solid footing?
The early phases, and I think you mentioned it earlier, that you know the companies go through 4 to 5 years of losses before you actually turn the corner, and we're just at the over 3-year mark now, where you go through that whole stage of validation of your business. So we went through lots of learnings around from a cash perspective of, you know, where we were spending and where we were trying to scale, and we did a lot of scaling too fast. So So when I actually took the chair a little over a year ago, we actually had even less than $250,000 in the bank. We were actually down to $0 at the time. We were actually just about to hit our line of credit when I actually got the keys. Because I took the actual helm in May, and we were at $250,000 at the end of Q1. So we actually were completely out of cash. And so the challenge was, you know, how do you keep the business moving forward? So the first thing that we did is that I reached out to our current investors and asked them to provide us some working capital to give us time to start looking at restructuring the business. So we were fortunate enough that current investors stepped up, added $400,000 into the business in June of last year, and provided us the time to figure out what to do next. And the first thing that we did was we looked at the cost structure of the business, and we looked at every area as to where we could actually reduce costs, but also maintaining revenues. We knew that we were going to affect our growth, but we wanted to make sure that we could at least retain our revenues. So we first off got that working capital put into the business to buy us some time. And then we made some steady deep cuts into the business. Not one huge deep cut that was impossible to recover from, but steady, sharp cuts into the business that allowed us to kind of heal quickly and keep moving forward. So that allowed us some time to figure out operationally how to make change within the business. But the second thing I needed to do was actually look at the actual corporate structure. And at the time, we had almost 70 million shares issued. So not only were we broken internally with regards to a bloated structure of the company and having to get that tighter and leaner as a business while still maintaining the growth of our product and the growth of our business, but we also had to look at the share structure. So we had to work with our board and ended up issuing a request to our shareholders to do a 10-to-1 rollback to allow us to effectively restart the company, if you will, where we did a 10-to-1 rollback that was approved at the end of November, which was instantly followed by a financing. And that financing requirement to help us, you know, pick up a little bit of the debt we had to accrue to get there, but also provide us the working capital to actually keep executing. And so we were very fortunate that our shareholders saw the value in not just, you know, driving costs down in the business, but also restructuring the business to give us a chance for success. And so we've done that where, you know, we continue to sort of make small, sharp, strategic cuts in the business. At the same time, got through this restructuring and the financing, which closed in January of this year. So now we actually are in a position where we can, you know, continue to accelerate and continue to grow the business. So tough times, but again, we had to look both inside and outside the business in order to get there. And that's how we did it.
Right. It's been quite a turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, we're still not out of the woods yet, but there's been lots of progress.
Okay. Steve, I have a question. Now the average SaaS company spends roughly 40% on sales and marketing, while Acru reduced sales spend almost 98% year over year last quarter. Can you talk about what's unique in your model and how you guys can grow while spending so little on marketing?
It's one of the biggest cost reduction areas that we made in the business, where we looked at the different departments, and traditionally you have an R&D department, a sales and marketing department, and an operations department. And we wanted to look across the business, and I actually did a lot of homework across the industry to see what was out there. And I found that there's a number of companies that have moved from a sales and operations being separate to being together. So it's a sales operations model, so combining the two entities together. Our business has a cost to support our customers, to support our channels. And so what we did was we began teaching our operational people how to also be salespeople, how to actually, you know, develop and grow our customers to retain our relationships with our channel partners and to grow it from there. We continue to sort of tweak that model where now we're starting to hire in salespeople and teaching them how to do operational tasks as opposed to taking operational people and teaching them sales tasks. So we're working through that model. But what it's allowed us to do is it's allowed us to substantially reduce the actual sales and marketing costs because we've just taken those administrative costs for the business that are required, and we're taking those costs that are fixed for the business and turning those individuals into revenue-generating individuals. We've seen other people in our space do it, and so we've adopted it, and we put our own little twist on it, and that's what's going to allow us to kind of keep executing. We will have to get into doing some type of marketing again in the future, but from a sales and operations perspective, by bringing it together, reduces overall costs, and I actually believe that we're getting more bang on our buck. We've got a tighter relationship with our customers from a referral and growth standpoint than we ever have. And our channel partners prefer that our sales team that is reaching out to their customers, they're even more knowledgeable because they understand how to set up deploy, support, and train our customers. So they're even more skilled than our traditional salespeople were. So it's been a very smart pivot for us that we continue to work to tweak to make it better, but we've had plenty of progress, and so I've been very satisfied with the change, and that's why we made it.
Great. One of the biggest challenges for small cap SaaS companies, as we've discussed, is the time it takes to become cash flow positive. You mentioned you're 3 years in now. How do you manage this challenge and ensure your company has adequate funding to reach profitable operations?
It's probably the number one thing that any small cap company or micro cap company should be thinking about is cash. You know, we review our cash on a weekly basis. You know, cash is king in every business, but especially in a small cap business that's still not at profitability. So you have to have a constant eye on it. And, you know, the traditional model is, you know, death by a thousand cuts, I actually disagree with. I think if you're doing smart strategic cuts to the business where you're trying to make, you know, reduce costs while maintaining growth of the business as well, I think it's a smart way to do it. So we're constantly forcing ourselves to look at every area of the business. You know, every cost that we have, what type of return on investment are we getting for that person's time? And we've been under constant analysis. And so the cash constraints, as much as they're difficult on a business, it's actually been one of the best things for us. That we didn't have this unlimited cash in front of us, because it stops you from doing things like scaling too quickly and over-hiring. It forces you to be really prudent with how you're managing yourselves. So how we're managing it is just that. You know, we're very tight on our budget. And as much as, you know, we have great investors and we've got even, you know, we had financing in January and we have warrants that are starting to slowly start triggering over the next little while, we know we have access to capital, but we're not in a rush to have, you know, millions of dollars in the door today, because we're managing it as if it's not coming in. And we're managing ourselves on a month-to-month and bi-weekly basis to make sure that we're doing all the prudent things in the business. And anytime we can reduce costs while still maintaining or growing revenue, we do it.
Okay. And can you talk about the advantages of using a SaaS model in particular in your space? What advantages do you have over loyalty providers using a traditional on-premise deployment method?
Well, I think what you're seeing is, you know, the SaaS model, as you've mentioned, especially in our industry, it's become quite popular. And, you know, traditional SaaS is that subscription-based model. So it's not transactionally based where you've got this fixed amount of revenue that's growing your business. And, you know, a lot of the investment models, even in the payment space, it's sort of a pay-as-you-go. And so there's risk to that because you can't really control that revenue and it becomes a little bit less predictable. Whereas by having these fixed-rate subscription kind of agreement models, you can kind of really predict your business short-term and long-term into the future. So it's an advantage over some of the traditional pay-as-you-go or per-transaction models by going there. Most of our direct competitors are moving in that direction or are already there. But it's our indirect competitors that are doing more of the on-premise deployment. And if you look at the point-of-sale software companies that are out there, those are the individuals that still have thick client environments where they're limited to that localized environment. So to really dumb it down, so to speak, if you think of a point-of-sale system that works at a single business, that business can't communicate with other businesses, whereas our product can do that. We have the ability to connect two businesses together. Allows us to do things like what we call coalitions, where you mix two businesses where they co-brand on a program together. It allows us to do things like distribution, where we're selling gift cards for our customers at other environments. And so the thin client, you know, model that we've got allows us to do that. Whereas, you know, you've got some of the people in the space, and I call them indirect competitors, like the point-of-sale software companies that have started to sell loyalty modules, but they're going to be limited. They won't be able to spread their wings into multi-business to allow a lot of the features and functionalities that a lot of merchants are looking for today. So it sort of creates a stronghold for third-party providers like Accru is in order to be able to provide that extra step of growth opportunity for our merchants.
Mm-hmm. Steve, now that you've made two acquisitions so far as CEO, can you talk about how these have gone and what opportunities you see for further acquisition in the SaaS space?
I've been very happy with both acquisitions. Maybe what I'll do is I'll talk about each one of them separately. Photo gift card, the strategy there was a number of things, but one of them was to get into a complementary business. We had looked at our gift card offering, wanted to round it out, and we wanted to get into distribution. That's where you see, you know, where we have the ability to sell our customers gift cards in other environments, and we take a commission for it, but it helps create another revenue stream. Photo Gift Card has that through the Photo Gift Card Mall. So it was our first step into distribution, which we took the next step later on with Blackhawk Network, where you see cards going into the Loblaws of the world and what have you. So distribution was a big next step we needed to take for our gift card business. We were happy to do that. It was also the right price because of the ownership and what they had done for the business there from a valuation standpoint. And most importantly, they had a great list of customers that we continue to work with. The challenge there has been the technology and implementing that technology into our environment and operationally taking over their business. They had outsourced all of their product overseas, and operationally they really had a handful of people doing so. So we've had to take that product all in-house, operationally, you know, take it all over completely, move offices from Vancouver to Ottawa. So it's been cumbersome. So the last quarter has been really challenging for us managing the integration of that. And so one of the key learnings was, you know, expecting and understanding there's going to be an operational strain in the business in order to do these acquisitions. Short-term pain, but for long-term gain. Dealer Rewards is very new to us now. And once again, you know, I was very happy with the structure of the deal itself. It brings in a lot of SaaS business into the company. It's a fixed loyalty business as well. And what was great about them is not only did we end up taking on great customers and revenues, but we got some great talent. Talent that's allowed us to kind of do some other restructuring within the business because their talent was so strong and their business was very aligned with the crew where they had an exact sales operations model like we're running today. So even culturally, it was a very simple fit. So what it allows us to do is, and what we've learned is the valuations we gave, the deal structures that we created in both of these scenarios, it allows us to kind of look for more of these in the future. And when it comes to talent acquisition, it's almost ideal that you kind of have cultures that work similar so that the integration of the two companies is not painful, that it can be quick and be brought right into the business. So you get this SaaS recurring growth, you get an operational change that's minimized, and then you get upside through talent. And so what we've learned through the first two is what to look for the next two. So it's actually they've been very successful. Lots of work, but we've been very happy with the progress so far.
Good. One last question from me. How do you use key metrics like churn, customer lifetime value, and customer acquisition cost in your analysis of Acru and other businesses you are looking at acquiring?
So we've been, you know, we're a very metric-driven business, and you're starting to see a number of them through the investor decks that we posted, where I've been trying to provide some guidance to the market around the key metrics of our business and a lot of the items that we analyze internally within the company. And stuff like our attrition rate is really critical. And knowing that we're maintaining a less than 10% churn rate suggests that potentially, you know, we're retaining customers for 9 years. So if we're losing 10%, you could argue that it's 9 years. But what we do is we model out at half of that result. And our internal modeling is based on, you know, 4.5 to 5 years. And so we look at it saying, if we're assuming that our customers are going to stay with us for 4.5 to 5 years, because we haven't even been around for 4.5 to 5 years yet to really know. But we've done all of our modeling there. And then as we've looked at our cost of sales, which isn't as obvious to the market, because now that we've taken away sales and marketing from a financial statements perspective, there are costs within our administrative costs now through operations and commissioning and paying our channels, what have you, that is there. So we're actually able to really have a good understanding of our true cost to acquire, what we believe our lifetime value of the customer is, and we always want to make sure that we're better than one third. So I want, if our lifetime value is $3,000, I want to make sure that our cost to acquire is less than $1,000. So we've been trying to work in that model where it's at least one third, and it's actually much less. Our cost to acquire is less than that 30% goal that we've had for ourselves, and so which is a good sign for the business. Knowing that our customers are, you know, 4.5 to 5 years of the current modeling, to have them paid off in the first 12 to 18 months is a good victory for the business, where you then get 4 years of true profits on their payments into you. So that actually plays into our when we are analyzing other acquisitions, just like that as well. And their attrition level is big. We've looked at companies like the people in the debit credit space, and attrition there is massive. You're talking 30-40% sometimes versus our less than 10. So buying the debit credit companies, the valuation isn't as high in our opinion because of that turnover, especially when you change hands. So we know that in our specific specialty payment space, attrition is critical, and looking at the historical amount of attrition is the first metric. We understand our own cost to acquire. So I'm not as concerned about our acquisitions cost to acquire because we understand our own, but I'm really interested in their lifetime value of their customers when we're looking to do an acquisition and how it relates to churn and what have you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And and last question from us, Steve. What milestones should investors be looking for in 2015 and beyond?
I think the biggest and most obvious one, and I've been providing a bit of guidance to the market, is that, you know, we're striving to have our first profitable quarter this year. You know, our goal is that Q4, we've got a profitable quarter to boast on. And hopefully, you know, it's a big enough quarter to make up for the losses that were happening earlier in the year. So the biggest and first metric is turning that first profitable quarter. Beyond that, it's year-over-year growth. I've been in the job for a year now, and the market should start looking at our quarters year-over-year now. And what are we doing from a year-over-year basis with regards to revenue growth and cost control and location growth? As we're growing our footprint and expanding our business is a very important metric. And then the other last one is the revenue metrics around that. So I've provided a bit of guidance in our investor decks around the revenue we get per current customer and per new customer. And seeing those metrics either sustain or grow is a positive metric to look for, and milestones that the business should be looking that the investor should be looking at. But those are the big key ones for us. Look at year over year growth. Look at our first profitable quarter, and then look at again at how the key metrics of our business are trending. And I think if that people have their eyes on those pieces, they'll understand all the good things that we're doing in the great direction that we're headed in.
All right. Well, should be an exciting 2015, and we wish you the best of luck. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We'd like to thank Steve Levely of Acru for coming on to share his company's story with us. And we'd like to thank all the small cap discoveries and the SPAS microcap followers for tuning into this webcast. As a reminder, we will release a transcript of this interview and part two of our SaaS series through the SED newsletter and the SPAS microcaps blog. Thank you.